Now, Bhagavataha, Bhagavataha. Devotees of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Nityam, eternally, Bhuta Anugraha Kataraha, very much anxious to bestow benedictions upon the fallen conditioned souls. Prate, accept. Quam, yourself. So redaknam, a breaker of friendship. Therefore not countable among the Bhagavatas, or devotees of the Lord. Vai, indeed. Vairam karam, you create enmity. Avairanam, toward persons who are not enemies. So, translation. All the devotees of the Lord, but you are very kind to the conditioned souls and are eager to benefit others. Although you wear the dress of a devotee, you create enmity with people who are not your enemies. Or you break friendship and create enmity between friends. Are you not ashamed of posing as a devotee while performing these abominable actions? So, purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki. Such are the criticisms that must be borne by the servants of Narada Muni in the disciplic succession. Through the Krishna Consciousness Movement, we are trying to train young people to become devotees, just young people. That's interesting. Wow, Prabhupada says it himself. And return home, back to Godhead, by following rigid regulative principles, but our service is appreciated neither in India nor abroad in the Western movement, in the Western countries, where we are endeavoring to spread this Krishna Consciousness Movement. In India, the caste Brahmins have become enemies of the Krishna Conscious Movement because we elevate foreigners who are supposed to be malechas and yavanas to the position of brahmanas. We train them in austerities and penances and recognize them as brahmanas by awarding them sacred threads. Thus, the caste brahmanas of India are... In the West also, the parents of the young people who join this movement have also become enemies. We have no business creating enemies, but the process is such that non-devotees will always be inimical toward us. Nevertheless, as stated in the Shastras, a devotee should be both tolerant and merciful. Devotees engaged in preaching should be prepared to be accused by ignorant persons, and yet they must be very merciful to the fallen conditioned souls. If one can execute his duty in the disciplic succession of Narada Muni, his service will surely be recognized. As the Lord says in Bhagavad Gita in the 18th chapter, texts 68-69, Yahidam padamam guhyam ad bhakteshvapidashyati vaktimai param kutva mamivasyatya samsayaha nachatasman manusheshu kashinme prikurtamaha bhagatana chametasmad anya priyataro bhuvi. For one who explains the supreme secret to the devotees, devotional service is guaranteed. And at the end, he will come back to me. There is no servant in this world more dear to me than he, nor will there ever be one more dear. Let us continue preaching the message of Lord Krishna and not be afraid of enemies. Our only duty is to satisfy the Lord by this preaching, which will be accepted as service by Lord Chaitanya and Lord Krishna. We must sincerely serve the Lord and not be deterred by so-called enemies. In this verse, the word suradnam, breaker of friendship, is used because Narada Muni and the members of his disciplic succession disrupt friendships and family life. They are sometimes accused of being suradnam, creators of enmity between relatives. Actually, such devotees are friends of every living entity, suradam sarva bhutanam, for they are misunderstood to be enemies. Preaching can be a difficult, thankless task, but a preacher must follow the orders of the Supreme Lord and be unafraid of materialistic persons. Anu bhagavata nityam bhutanu graha kattadaha vritetvam vritetvam savratadnam vai vairam karam avairinam. So Om Ganatya Madandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmanditam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So actually, this reminds me of something from the Bible, where even Jesus Christ says, you know, I've come to cause, he doesn't use the enmity, the word enmity, but I like basically conflict between mothers and sons and husbands and wives and all those other stuff. So don't join the Krishna conscious movement. Anyway, so we see in the lives of practically every great devotee, they're confronted with conspiracies or enmity because they're interfering with people's sense gratification. And I'll give you an example. You know, we started talking about Jesus Christ, so I'll give you an example from the Bible. Jesus Christ actually got condemned by the priests more than he did than by the Romans. I think most of you know that. I mean, the Romans, they were... Actually, it's interesting. The Romans, they were very much into a plurality of religions. What I mean by plurality? Many religions. It's not that the Romans ever fought a war, a religious war, to establish Zeus. You know, nowadays, of course, there's religious wars to establish whoever happens to be your favorite acharya. You know, anyway, the Christians, the Mohammedans, all the interesting Middle Eastern religions. It's interesting. The Middle Eastern religions, oh my God, I'm going to get in trouble for this, are tribal religions. You understand tribal? Tribal means, you know, basically, you know, just us and them type of religion. That's tribal. Like you have your football teams. You know, the, I don't know what your football team here in Slovenia is called. Is there a name for it? The Slovenian what? Nothing. Anyway, in America, all the teams have a name, like some are called the Alligators, and some are called the Bears, and the whatever, you know, these stupid names. So anyway, and then they hate each other, and sometimes even in South America, they have these riots at the football games where they kill each other. Especially, you know, like in Argentina and other places like that, you know, football riots. Do you have that in Europe? Football riots? Very nice. In America, we don't have that because everyone's too drunk to hurt each other. You know, they're just in the mode of ignorance. So anyway, so religion, that's tribal religion. And in India, we have more or less something like a philosophical religion. Anyway, getting back to the Romans and their religion and the Greeks and their religion, they never really fought wars to establish their gods as something to force people. And so, getting back to Jerusalem, and so Jesus Christ was preaching in Jerusalem. Of course, he was born in Bethlehem, as we know. And one of the ways that he preached was basically to overturn the money changers' tables at the Temple of Jerusalem and stop them from selling animals for slaughter at the Temple of Jerusalem. And in this way, he interfered with their business. You know, it's Kali Yuga religion where it's you're doing your religion to make money. It's a standard in Kali Yuga. Like even in India, you have the Bhagavad Saptaha people who are preaching the Bhagavatam, and reciting the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, and they're thinking of the money that they're making, and they're just trying to entertain people. I'm not criticizing all of them, but some of them are entertainers. Like they'll be giving a Bhagavad class, and they'll break out in song in the middle of the Bhagavad class. They'll start singing, and all the ladies are just like, oh my God, like that. And many of the famous kirtan leaders in India eat meat and drink liquor. How do I know that? Well, not that I drank liquor or ate meat with these people, but once upon a time we had one of the most famous kirtan leaders come to our temple in the United States to do a fundraiser with his band. And at night they had to be supplied with liquor and everything else. And there, you know, there was famous bhajan singer. Of course, devotees also get attracted to famous bhajan singers who are not devotees. I know that sometimes devotees listen to classes, not classes, sorry, but listen to bhajans of people who eat meat. Wow, pretty nice. So anyway, so this is religion or financial accruement in the name of religion. So these Pharisees and Sadducees, that they were the religious people in the Jewish religion, you know, the priests, so to speak. They were very upset that Jesus Christ was disturbing their business. And because they were very upset that Jesus Christ was disturbing their business, they arranged for him to be crucified. And the Romans, they were ready to forgive Jesus Christ for whatever he did. I mean, they weren't even interested. You know, let him preach, you know, he says he's the Messiah. Actually, he never said he was God. It's interesting. Another interesting point is now many Christians, or maybe perhaps most Christians, they go around saying Jesus is Lord. Did you ever hear that before? But Jesus himself never said it, so why not accept him on the basis of what he said about himself rather than accept something, some mental speculation about him? You know, if I say I am such and such, you just accept my opinion about who I am. So, anyway, so they eventually, they crucified him. And he was very determined to preach Krishna consciousness in his own way, according to time, place, and circumstance. So he accepted that crucifixion. He could have, basically he could have left Jerusalem, escaped, because he knew the crucifixion was there. He actually predicted it. That, you know, before the night is over, he said that Peter would deny him three times and, you know, he'd be captured. So he did this because preaching is very important, so he had to face so many risks. And you see this, practically speaking, as I mentioned before, in the case of every preacher who was ever prominent. Let's take the case of Sripad Ramanujacharya. Sripad Ramanujacharya was preaching, of course, that Vishnu, who is expansion, Narayan, obviously, expansion of Krishna, Haribol, is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And the king at that time, he didn't like that because he was a devotee of Lord Shiva. And so he wanted to capture Sripad Ramanujacharya and bring him and convince him or force him to accept Lord Shiva as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Okay. So he sent his men to get Ramanujacharya. Ramanujacharya knew what was happening. And Ramanujacharya's chief disciple, his name was Kuresh, decided to dress like Ramanujacharya and make believe he was Ramanujacharya so his guru wouldn't be harassed like that. So anyway, so they brought Koresh in to see this king. And the king said, Lord Shiva is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and Koresh sort of insulted everybody there. You know, establishing the actual point that Lord Narayan is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And the king got so upset that he took out the eyes, he plucked out the eyes, or had the eyes poked out of this devotee, Koresh. And so, actually this is an exhibition of Ramanujacharya's compassion and the devotee's compassion. So, Koresh went back to his spiritual master, Ramanujacharya, and he told the spiritual master what had happened, you know, he lost his eyes, and Ramanujacharya said, go to the deity, and the deity's name was Varadaraja. Varadaraja means the king of wish-fulfilling deities. He's in Kanchipuram. Anyone here ever been to Kanchipuram? Yeah, been to Kanchipuram. You seen the temple? So, he told Koresh, go before the deity and ask for your eyes back. So Koresh went before the deity, came out, and he still was blind. And Ramanujacharya said, didn't you ask for your eyes back? What happened with the deity? And he said, no, I asked that the king would be forgiven. Amazing, isn't it? And then Ramanujacharya said, don't you understand, your eyes belong to me. It means, that's how the disciple sees, you know, that the whatever he has, his talents, whatever strength he or she has, belongs to the spiritual master, for the spiritual master's preaching of Krishna consciousness. So go back and ask for your eyes back. So he went back and asked for his eyes back, and he got his eyes back. He was able to see, fainted, and got his eyes back. And the king, as far as the king, he became known as Krimikanta after that, which means worm throat, because some disease, I guess it was cancer or something like that, attacked his throat, and he died from something related with that. So the point is, in the case of Ramanujacharya, and of course with Prabhupada met so many obstacles. And not only the obstacles coming from people who were not Krishna conscious, but Prabhupada actually met obstacles from coming from his godbrothers who were Krishna conscious. Well, I mean, practically from the beginning, I mean, his godbrothers, after his spiritual master, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, left this world, Prabhupada was struggling with his godbrothers. I mean, they... Shishi Gornitai, Shishi Panchatai Vulki Jai. Prabhupada basically wanted to cooperate with his godbrother. Sometimes people say, well, Prabhupada left the Gaudiya Math so we can leave the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. I mean, they use that excuse. You know. But Prabhupada left the Gaudiya Math, first of all, because there was no Gaudiya Math. Because it had broken up into all sorts of different institutions, because they tried to appoint acharyas, the acharyas fought with each other in court and other places. And then, even when Prabhupada tried to cooperate on an individual basis with one or two of his godbrothers and stay at their ashram, and basically they kicked him out of the ashram, kicked him out of the temple. They said, just give him one or two sets of clothes and tell him, you know, just go on his way, you know. You're too advanced for these young devotees here. And so Prabhupada was kicked out. And then so much opposition, you know, struggle, you know, just gored by a bull. Of course, the bull wasn't against Krishna consciousness, but just happened to be there in the streets. And then Sumati Morji didn't want to give him a ticket to go. He had to get permission to leave the country, and they wouldn't give him permission to leave the country. I mean, so many stories you read about in the Prabhupada Lilamrita, I think it was called a P form to get out of the country. So they wouldn't give him permission, and then he just pushed his way to the boss and finally got permission and finally pushed Sumati Morji. Actually, even to speak to Sumati Morji, he had to sit on the steps of her office building and wait for her to come out. He was so determined. And so... so much determination. And then on the boat, heart attacks, and then he got to New York, and his godbrothers refused to help him in any way. Even though he had a place, he had a commitment for money to buy a place in New York, and his godbrothers wouldn't help him release the funds in India to send to New York. And so much opposition. And then we mentioned the other day, Prabhupada, opposition from the deprogrammers, from the parents. And Prabhupada just remained determined. Opposition from Mr. Nair in Mumbai. I mean, so many stories like that, isn't it? And then, but Prabhupada never got discouraged. He just continued preaching. And what was the source of his encouragement? That's an interesting point. Of course, he's a pure devotee. He's seeing Krishna every minute. But I understand that the source of his encouragement was his conviction that the success potency is built into the order of the spiritual master. You know, if we have to talk about who is more advanced and who is less advanced, there's an objective standard. And, you know, people think the objective standard is based upon how many verses someone knows in the Srimad Bhagavatam, or based upon, you know, how melodious someone's voice is, or based upon, you know, some other external characteristic. But the objective standard by which we can judge a devotee's spiritual advancement is how dedicated they are to their spiritual master. I mean, like, look at all of Prabhupada's godbrothers. They all got the order, at least the ones who could speak English, they got the order from Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur to preach in English and go to the Western world. Practically everyone who spoke English got that order. And who fulfilled it? Who carried out that order with firm determination? Prabhupada. So that's the proof of his exalted position. Like, don't look for some esoteric truth, a proof. You know, generally we look for esoteric things, like last night we were talking about, you know, someone who esoterically says he can talk to Prabhupada, right? You know, he goes in front of the deity and the deity speaks to him. Of course, the deity is saying everything different than he said in his books, which is interesting, you know. Yes, I couldn't tell this to my real disciples because they weren't ready, but you're ready because you're more advanced. Because you just joined the Krishna Consciousness Movement 3 years ago, or 2 years ago, whatever it is. You're more advanced than my disciples. Huh? Oh my God. So, I mean, this is called... What's that? This is called insanity. You know, spiritual advancement is judged by one's determination to carry out the order of the spiritual master. It's a simple thing, a very simple standard. And as we mentioned last night, the order of His Divine Grace to the Prabhupada is to serve His mission. And so in serving His mission, there'll be many people, not only who attack us, but so many trials and tribulations. It's like if you're a temple president, like Anantapuru. So many trials and tribulations and heartbreaks and things like that, but the determination has to be maintained. So anyway, so this we see in the case of Narada Muni here, who knows that he's making enemies of Daksha. In fact, it's not that he's making an enemy of Daksha. Daksha is making him an enemy. There's a difference between that. Because a Vaishnava is described as Ajata Shatrava. Lord Kapiladev describes the qualities of Vaishnava. He says, Tatikshiva Guru Nika Surada Sarvadehina Ajata Shatrava Shanta Sarva Sarvabhushana. What does he say? A devotee is tolerant, he's merciful, he's a friend to all living entities, and he doesn't have any enemies. Except people consider him to be their enemy, but he doesn't consider anyone else to be his enemy. He's Suridam Sarvabhutanam. Like Krishna describes about himself, you know, in the fifth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Samoham Sarvabhutanam. Anyway, he says that Suridam, I am a friend of all living entities. So in the same way, a Vaishnava is a friend of all living entities. So, but people will not like you because of that. And sometimes we even have to fight, like Prabhupada fought, to establish Krishna consciousness, and even fought with Nair and other people like that. Anyway, so this is Narada Muni's position. He's very merciful. Daksha is completely wrong, and he's committing a mad elephant offense, and Daksha's thinking he's a better devotee than Narada Muni, which happens sometimes when people are admired. So, any questions or comments about any of these points? Nanda, any questions about this? Guru Tattva, again? Anyway, so that's how you know who is an advanced devotee. Standard. Who is dedicated to the mission of his spiritual master? Simple. Simple standard. Not someone who talks about the Rasa Leela. Not someone who you know, just like dances for 48 hours without stopping. Of course, that'd be nice if you could do that. But someone who is dedicated to the mission of the spiritual master. Yes, Ananda. Microphone for Ananda.
What if one's faith in Prabhupada representative is shaken or weakened by, you know, information on the internet or somehow? What's the remedy?
Well, if one... Okay, if one's faith is shaken by reading something on the internet. Now, the interesting thing about the internet, you can find something positive and negative about almost anybody, even the present president of the United States, you can find positive things about him, which is incredible. I mean, you really have to have a good imagination. So, I mean, that's the nature of the internet. Now, they'll criticize you for anything. And the more prominent you are, the more they'll criticize you. Like Prabhupada's godbrothers, they criticized him. I mean, if there was the internet when Prabhupada was on the planet, you would have read all these things about Prabhupada, you know, like they said, Prabhupada likes to associate with low-class mulatchas like, you know, us. And, you know, there's so much criticism on the internet. The internet is, you know, at least 50% negative stuff. So I don't take things seriously when I read them on the internet. So one should clarify that. Let's say if you have faith in someone, okay, and you read something about them that they were seen smoking ganja or something like that. I'm trying to think of what someone said about me on the internet. It's interesting. A lot of interesting things about me. But anyway, so whatever it is, I'm trying to think of a criticism of me on the internet. I'm sure there's a lot. So then you should clarify that with the person who's being criticized. You could say, you know, I read this, and it's, or you can clarify that with the temple president and ask the temple president, you know, what is this all about? And, you know, sometimes there will be some valid criticism of someone. That's true. But ultimately we take shelter in Srila Prabhupada and other advanced devotees in our Krishna consciousness movement. It's not that, you know, if one person has trouble, that we throw the baby out with the proverbial bathwater. You know. So, I mean, that's how someone should deal with it. Why should you leave Prabhupada because someone has made a mistake? Does that make sense? What do you think?
I mean, their action is that they approach Prabhupada by directly ignoring the...
Yeah, but how do they approach Prabhupada? What's their methodology? Huh?
Directly hearing from here? speaking with him?
Well, I mean, you can hear from him. I can give you all Prabhupada's classes, which I have in MP3 form. Anybody's interested, you know, bring me your USB stick. And I'll let you hear directly from Prabhupada. I'll channel Prabhupada for you through my USB stick. See, I'm even more advanced than these so-called psychics. Because I can just use a little stick, but they need a whole body to channel Prabhupada. You understand? You know, who is more advanced? Yeah, I have Prabhupada on my mobile phone. I can channel Prabhupada through my mobile phone. Wow. I'm really advanced in Krishna consciousness. Anyway, so the point is, let them approach Prabhupada through his words and his instructions. And what is, like we talked about last night, what are Prabhupada's instructions that to serve his mission? Your love will be tested by how you cooperate. Love for me, how you cooperate. And would Prabhupada be pleased if someone left his mission? I don't think so. I don't think so. I mean, there has to be something objective. If everything is just mystical and misty, as Prabhupada said, then where's the standard of anything? Like, our philosophy is very objective. We have definitive information about Krishna, the living entity. You know, if I come up with my own philosophy, like if I say, well, the soul is not eternal. For example, like some people come up with their own philosophy and they say the soul at one point was born and then becomes eternal. But where does Krishna say such a thing like that? Krishna says, you know, ajo nicha shashvato yam purana. That means Ja, Aja. What does Aja mean? Does anyone know Aja? Unborn. Like Jayate, you know, to be born. Ja means born. Aja. Aja o nicha sashvato yam purana nahanyate hanya mane shivirai. So Krishna says that. And if I come up with my own philosophy, then don't use the Bhagavad Gita to it. I shouldn't use the Bhagavad Gita to propagate my philosophy. So don't use Prabhupada's name to propagate something that Prabhupada never said and never would say. So they're using Prabhupada's name, like the people in the Temple of Jerusalem who were using the name of God to make money. Right? They were changing money. It's interesting, you go to the holy places in India, and if you want to change a 100-rupee note, you get 80 rupees. Did you ever see that? Then in Govardhan, as you enter the parikrama path coming from the city of Govardhan, going towards the tail of Govardhan, there's all these money changers. You know, because you want to give money to the beggars, so you give them 100 rupees, and they'll give you like 80 rupees in exchange. Good business, isn't it? Nowadays, of course, professionally, that's called Forex. So we even had devotees in the past who wanted to make money through this Forex, didn't we? And they lost a lot of money, hundreds of thousands of euros. So anyway, the priests in the Temple of Jerusalem, they wanted to make money by changing money and by selling lambs for slaughter. So it was just based upon their own personal self-centered interests. That's why they arranged for Jesus Christ to be crucified for that particular reason. Also the Brahmanas in India, the same thing. Because why are they so concerned that Hare Krishna devotees from Lakshadesh will become Brahmanas? Well, they're concerned because it will hurt their business. They'll make less money. The more anyone who's studied economics in the university knows that the more supply there is, the price goes down. Right? You would study that? Let's say there's a scarcity. There's no more rice in the marketplace. There was a drought or something. the rice will be very expensive. And so those who have rice to sell will make a lot of money. Prabhupada said that during a particular period in India, the businessmen, they hoarded the rice. They had rice, but they hoarded it. Hoarding it means they just kept it and didn't sell it, so to keep the price high. What does Saudi Arabia do with the oil? Does anyone know? Anyone know? What's OPEC? Anyone know what OPEC is? No one knows. Sorry about that. OPEC is the Organization for Petroleum Exporting Countries. I learned something new from Bhagavatam class today. And so what they meet, what they do is they meet and they decide how much they're going to produce because they don't want the price to go down too much. Did you know that? They restrict their production of oil. Because you see, anyone who studied the market, sometimes the oil goes really high, close to $100, 100 euros per barrel. And sometimes it goes really low. And it just like goes up and down. And people are betting in the markets about the price of oil. So they meet to restrict the quantity, the supply, so that the price will remain stable or go up. In the same way, the brahmanas, they meet to restrict the supply of brahmanas. Because brahmanas make money from doing brahminical things. One of the things they do is yajnas. Just like we had a yajna the other day. There's only one brahmana in the temple. Of course, so many brahmanas. But one devotee who could do the yajnas in the temple, right? How many other devotees you have? You can do yajnas. You have Bart, but he wasn't here that day. So therefore, that brahman, I'm not saying he's doing that, that brahman can charge more money to do the yajna. So he charged us 5,000 euros to do that yajna the other day. Not that's a joke. Because we had no alternative. That's a joke. He didn't. He did? He did it out of the goodness of his heart. So, but in India, the brahmanas, traditionally, they would make their money from doing this sacrifice, different sacrifices, different samskaras. Like if you want to have a name for your kid, you got to pay a brahmin 100 euros, or whatever it was. Or if you wanted to die, if you wanted to get married, the brahmanas had a price list. Actually, sometimes in certain ISKCON temples that have a large Indian congregation, they have a price list for different sacrifices. They said, you know, they actually do. They publish it on the internet. You know, if you want to have a particular samskara, it's 100 euros, $100, and we take credit cards and like that. So the brahmin comes, the professional brahmin. And in Fiji, I experienced that a lot. There's actually a brahmin organization. It's a legal organization because there's a lot of Indians in the country. And you have to be a legal brahmin to do a marriage performance, whatever it is. And it's limited. So what happened in India is that there was a revolt against these brahmanas. And the brahmanas were upset there was a revolt thousands of years ago, and the brahmanas were upset with Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And they even tried to kill Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. You know the famous story that they went to the police and bribed the police chief so he would look the other way when they killed Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. But the police chief naturally was afraid of killing a sadhu or having anything to do with killing a sadhu, so he revealed that to Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He said, normally we take bribes so the people are killed, he admitted, but you're a sadhu, I don't want to take this chance. So the brahmanas felt threatened. But it was because of personal, financial interests that they felt threatened. Not because they were concerned that too many people would go back to Godhead. So in Kali Yuga, you know, the priests or the religious people in general have some personal interest for performing their religious activities. Anyway, so, does that answer your question, Siddhanta? Okay, another question. Who's first?
He has the mic.
He has the mic, so he's first. He's a man. He's a man. He goes first. I'm just joking. Yeah.
Vaishnava Prabhupada created ISKCON. Obviously, I mean, there is a big reason why he created ISKCON. He can.
Yeah.
He can just write the books. He got directly Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. He didn't give him such instruction in detail what should he do. He just gave him instruction, preaching the West and write books and read books.
Why did Prabhupada create ISKCON? Because he wanted to do what the Acharyas wanted, was to change the face, to create a revolution in the misdirected lives of an impious civilization, as the Bhagavatam said. He wanted to change the world. He was compassionate. He had the mood of Vasudev Dutt, who was ready to sacrifice everything in order to liberate everybody else. And therefore, an institution is absolutely required. We mentioned this last night. You require a vehicle to make a large number of devotees, people devotees. Although there's danger with having an institution, there's danger with having an organization, as Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur pointed out very nicely. But still, it's an absolute requirement. Because he wanted to change the face of the world. That was his intention. You need an organization to do anything substantial, to run a government, to run even in this temple, why do we need organization in the temple? What would happen if we didn't have an organization in the temple? What would happen, Ananta?
Nothing.
Well, that's it, no thing. You know, organization, there has to be a head of pujari, there has to be a head, someone who's cooking. You know, at least, maybe they're not the head, but you know, someone has to cook, has to be a temple president, has to be a treasurer. That's organization. That's an institution. And if you didn't have that, you'd never be able to maintain, you wouldn't have a temple, you wouldn't have a place for people to meet. Then, you know, how would anybody here become Krishna conscious? Maybe you'd have some person who was a yogi in his last life who would read Prabhupada's books and become Krishna conscious. You know, living on the top of the Tivoli mountain over there. I don't know. You probably wouldn't have a single person if there wasn't an institution, organization. Even there has to be organization with your sanghas here, right? And there has to be not only the facility organization, but there has to be organization to make sure that the Siddhanta or the philosophy is being taught correctly. Otherwise, nothing happens. How could you have anything without an organization? You know, they're just like you, when you go back to Serbia, you're riding a train. So there's a train organization, you know, that runs the trains. How could you have a train? How could you have a car? How can you have anything? There would simply be complete chaos in society without organization. Even your body has an organization in it. We were talking about that the other day. I mean, even your cell has an organization. You know, there's a, you know, society for cell consciousness. But anyway, even there's organization, the body is organized, everything's organized, and you... And someone proposes not to have things organized, nothing can be accomplished without organization. You got to organize your own life. I mean, management is part of life. So, we need ISKCON. Okay. So, Swari Radha, you had a question.
Guru, now when I and many of us belong to you and all of us belong to Prabhupada, now we understand that we can't make you happy by donations. And
I wouldn't say that. Wait a second, you're going a little too far here. I think you're changing the philosophy now. Okay.
Not only
oh yeah, not only, but that's okay.
And we understand also that we can make you and Prabhupada happy with by cooperating nicely with each other.
Yeah.
But what would do you and Prabhupada really, really happy?
When devotees become Krishna conscious, Prabhupada asked that question, how can I please you, Prabhupada? They're becoming Krishna conscious. By devotees being, let's say, more devotees and happier devotees, that's our GBC motto. That's what makes us happy. So happier devotees means devotees who are more Krishna conscious. So that makes us happier. Makes us happier. I mean, that's an important thing. I mean, money's not important. What is that? There's this funny saying in America. Money's not everything, but whatever is second is far behind. Anyways, I'm just joking. That's a saying we have in America. Or another saying, it says, in God we trust, everyone else pays cash. So... yeah, so that's what'll make Prabhupada happy. More devotees, happier devotees. Not necessarily more buildings or more money or more deities installed or anything like that, but more devotees, happier devotees. That's the whole purpose of everything. More devotees, more Krishna conscious devotees. Okay? That's the important thing. And you need an organization to do that. And we have to cooperate. Organization means cooperate, not chaos, not anarchy. So if those who love Prabhupada, they stay within Prabhupada's mission. Prabhupada actually said that. You read the fourth canto, part four. He deals specifically with this point, that when the guru passes away, the disciple should be ready to carry out the mission of the spiritual master. Otherwise, you should be ready to leave this world with the spiritual master. We mentioned that before. Any other questions? Yes. What? Okay. Die. That's an interesting question. We say about a devotee, he's a Maya, he's a Maya. Well,
thank you, energy.
Yeah, we shouldn't say, he's a Maya, he's a Maya, he's a Maya. We should try to help the person. We're compassionate. Like Lord Chaitanya, okay, here's an example, an appropriate example from the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Once upon a time, Lord Chaitanya was touring South India. And as he was touring South India with his servant, Krishnadas, Krishnadas was taken away by a bunch of gypsies, Indian gypsies, not like you have in Europe, but a little different. And these are called Bhattaharis. And these Bhattaharis used to take people away by using one of their young girls. The young girl would go out and go to a young man, some brahmachari in the brahmachari ashram. And the young girl would say, Hare Krishna. I don't know what they say. I mean, I'm a sannyasi. How do I know what ladies say? And they say, whatever they say, and they do whatever they do. And then what happened is this servant of Lord Chaitanya, he was directly with Lord Chaitanya. Pretty amazing. Can you imagine being directly, serving Lord Chaitanya means you were cooking for him or at least carrying his water pot and everything like that. Wow. And so he follows this young girl, like, hypnotized. And he goes into the Batahari place, camp. And Lord Chaitanya didn't say, he's a Maya, he's a Maya, he's a Maya. He said, I'm going to rescue him. And so he went to the Batahari camp and he said, you have taken my servant, give him back. And the Bataharis, they also do some voodoo or mystic stuff or whatever they do. They came out with their swords to hurt Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, being the Supreme Personality of Godhead, enabled his Yogamaya potency or Mahamaya potency, and these swords turned on the Bataharis and chopped the Bataharis to pieces. So devotees should be very bold in rescuing someone if they've fallen into Maya. So this happened even with Lord Chaitanya's own servant. Can you imagine? I mean, if I was Lord Chaitanya's servant, whew, I don't think I'd ever leave. Would you, Ananta? You know, you were Lord Chaitanya's servant, and some girl comes by, I would say, Hare Krishna. Actually, Srutakirti Prabhu tells a story of how he was Prabhupada's servant and a similar thing happened to him. Not that he joined the Bataharis or anything, but Prabhupada said, told him, he said, don't go in the kitchen in Los Angeles. And because in the kitchen in Los Angeles, there were many young, pretty girls looking for husbands. Kitchen, yeah. Two places in the temple can be quite dangerous. The kitchen and the deity room. Because there's close association between men and women sometimes in these places, isn't it? It could be dangerous. Hare Krishna. So he went into the kitchen against Prabhupada's orders. And then a little while later he said, Prabhupada, I found someone to get married to. And then he left. No, he didn't leave serving Prabhupada completely, but he left traveling with Prabhupada for some time. And then Prabhupada was so merciful that even though he had done this, it was a Krishna conscious marriage, he had a child. Prabhupada took the child later on, put him on his lap and played with the child. And then Prabhupada gave me the child after that. And he's my disciple. Anyways. Prabhupada was merciful, and I guess I was just as merciful accepting him. So the devotee's name is Mayapur Chandra. Some of you have met him, Mayapur Chandra. Anyway, those who've been in India with me or in America know. So the same thing happens. The Prabhupada always tries to save someone. And Prabhupada gets upset if someone just criticizes someone who has difficulty. There's this sannyasi who had some difficulty and another sannyasi broadcast the information. And Prabhupada got more upset with the devotee who was broadcasting the information than with the devotee who had fallen down. So what you're saying is true. You know, if someone is having trouble, we should try to solve it. If there's a problem, don't criticize the problem. This is another point. Sometimes you get people coming to the temple and say, this is wrong, this is wrong, that's wrong. I mean, the other day in one of our temples, one lady came to the temple and she saw that Prabhupada had not been given a new outfit for some time, And she's a seamstress. And she said, she became like Tadaka in the Ramayana. Anyway, I'm not going to tell you who Tadaka in the Ramayana is. I mean, she became like fire and went down. And she went after some devotee who had nothing to do with the outfit of Prabhupada. Criticizing. Like Prabhupada dressed in that outfit. Sometimes when people are angry, it's like that, like a lion roaring. You ever see that? I mean, even I'm scared of her. So anyway, so she did that, and I was just thinking, she's a seamstress. Why don't she just make an outfit for Prabhupada? You understand? So don't be part of the problem, be part of the solution. If you see there's some devotee struggling, don't say, he's falling. So get the hell out of there and save the guy. It's like in New York many years ago, some person was getting attacked on the street and people were sitting in their windows watching it happen. Isn't that interesting, you know? He's getting attacked. Wow, this, look at the knife, it's going into him. So many years ago, there was a fire. This is a good story, a Hare Krishna story. There was a fire in Australia in one building, and one lady, she wanted to jump. And the devotees didn't say, well, she's not the body, it's just her karma. The devotees took out the canopy from the Jagannath cart, held it out, and caught her, and saved her life. Can you imagine if they just said, well, it's fire, you know, she's just a karmi, you know, she has karma. And if she jumps, if she gets hurt, that's up to Krishna. I mean, that's stupid. So if someone has difficulty, we should figure out a way to save the person, like Lord Chaitanya did. Don't be part of the problem, be part of the solution.
I speak for this. Sometimes I have problem. Sometimes I have big problem. And the devotee give me extra negative energy, I have more problems.
That's right.
I have realization sometimes.
That's right.
Very heavy time, extra heavy.
Yeah, so if someone has a problem, like if someone finds that I'm doing something wrong, come to me and help me. Don't just like go on the internet and say some bad things about me. It's not going to help me. So be part of the solution. If you see something in the temple, let's say if you see the floor is dirty, don't go around screaming, you devotees never take care of the floor. Get your broom out, you idiot, and start sweeping. Right? Become part of the solution. Or it's like, you know, if you're on a ship and the ship is like having, you know, boat, it's having some problems, don't just jump off the ship. You try to help. Yeah, it's practical. So, yeah, you have a question. It's almost time for prasada. It is time for prasada.
Okay, sure. Thank you for the lecture. I know many interesting things, but I have to choose one which is most important for me. Yes, I have many questions. I've heard that my spiritual, I mean, the spiritual master who accepted me as his disciple only once, like indicating that he was directly responding to what he thought was Krishna's desire in that moment. And as I understand, he resisted this tendency or this for a long time before he said, all right, this is Krishna's desire.
Yeah.
I have to step on this path. And we see that all advanced devotees, they of course, and Krishna says, we have to refer to the scriptures about everything, and we have to check with advanced devotees. But there is also one term called realization, that we are as whatever we are, as whatever advancement. We are seeking for some personal realizations that we perceive with our impure senses or with relatively pure.
Right.
So, I mean, behind that desire to directly come in contact with Prabhupada is some good sentiment.
Oh yeah, that is very good.
Probably, but there.
somebody might say that is vanity, but that's not necessarily vanity.
That's true, that's true.
Maybe it's some sincere desire. Because when we very rarely hear our spiritual masters speak about their direct realization, and that's also the etiquette, but there is some paradox, because devotees seek for this personal realization, but they cannot get them because spiritual masters cannot speak about them, because it's not the etiquette and it's not the process. So we have to be humble and accept that this is not the process.
Yeah.
If you can comment on this, maybe.
Well, first of all, Prabhupada did not speak about his personal realization either. Prabhupada was asked questions like, do you ever feel great separation from your spiritual master? And the way Prabhupada answers that question, you don't need to ask. So there's certain things that are very personal that one doesn't speak about, you know, their personal realization like that. Like if I had seen Krishna last night, you know, whatever, and danced with him, which I didn't, I assure you I didn't. I saw Yamaraj last night. Anyway, so if I had, and I didn't dance with him, but if I had seen Krishna last night, I wouldn't talk about it. You know, the pure devotee hides his spiritual ecstasies. I mean, when we mentioned the other day, you know, once in a while Prabhupada's ecstasy would come out. And he's very humble about, very humble about expressing how he was fighting against Krishna's desire and finally gave in. Like, Prabhupada did the same thing. Prabhupada talked about how he had many dreams of his spiritual master saying, take sannyas, take sannyas. And Prabhupada was said, when I had the dream, he was horrified. So that indicates that, but it's not that Prabhupada was fighting against it, but he was humbly portraying his position. A devotee is very humble. You know, he considers himself to be fallen. As soon as we consider ourselves to be exalted, we're in trouble. As soon as I say that, you know, I'm, you know, Krishna conscious, I'm, you know, whatever, I'm free of material desires, or, you know, I saw Krishna last night, or whatever it is, that's it, you know, that's it, you know, I'm probably going to get smashed really badly after that particular statement. So one has, you know, a devotee just doesn't speak, but he can reveal his internal realizations to his spiritual master and to more advanced devotees, but not in public. You know, I had one of my disciples came to me the other day with, you know, very nice, advanced realization. And he said, should I speak about it with my wife? He asked me, and his wife, obviously. And he said, and I said, no, just keep it to yourself. Because when you speak about it, it says you keep your Ishtadeva hidden, you keep your japa beads hidden, relationship with your spiritual master. I mean, it's hidden. Not, you know, of course, you tell people your spiritual master is, but it's just these are, or you know, a wife's love for her husband, or husband's love for his wife. Nowadays, in the modern world, you see everything happens in the open. You know, but traditionally in India, you didn't have boys and girls walking arm in arm, hand in hand, together. I mean, when I first went to India, the wives and the husbands would actually even walk separately when they were walking in a holy place. Things have changed in India, too. Like the wife, yeah, they would walk, the women would walk with the women, the men would walk with the men. And now when I go to Govardhan, I see couples walking hand in hand around Govardhan. You know, loving exchange around Govardhan. So, but that's something private. I don't want to see someone's private loving exchanges. You know, it has nothing to do with me being a sannyasi or not being a sannyasi or something like that. Because I like to see people's loyalty to their wife and husband. That I like to see. That's the real evidence of love, isn't it? The evidence of love, I mean, let's just talk about even in this material world, in a marriage situation, is not the hearts and the flowers and the hands and the, you know, little kisses or whatever. Yuck. And so It's not those things. It's that one's loyalty is the evidence of love. Just like in the marriage ceremony, at least, you know, that I know about, they say, do you promise to stay this with this person through happiness and distress, heat and cold, pleasure and pain, summer and... No, that's Bhagavad Gita. So, but it's similar to the verse in Bhagavad Gita. So to love to me is manifested most powerfully in loyalty. That's my. I'm giving you my internal realization. To me, that is the highest ecstasy. And you see that in the last chapter of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, where Radharani's love is demonstrated by her speaking through Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mouth about her willingness to even serve Krishna, even if it means helping Krishna meet with a competitor. You know, and she actually says, if my happiness is, you know, Krishna, my unhappiness is Krishna's happiness, then my unhappiness is my happiness, you know, which appears to be a contradiction. But actually, that's the loyalty, dedicate, you know, to me, that's realization. Loyalty, dedication, and that's the gopis. You know, you could say, well, the gopis, it's the dancing, it's the hearing the flute and everything. No, it's the loyalty and the dedication to pleasing Krishna. Because when we hear about the pastimes between Krishna and the gopis, we conditioned souls generally think it's just like, you know, wow, we get to enjoy Krishna. You know, gopis get to enjoy Krishna. No, they're simply thinking of giving Krishna pleasure. That's realization, isn't it? So I'm hoping in the future to simply think of giving Prabhupada pleasure, giving Krishna pleasure. And that means, you know, ignoring my own happiness and distress. Is that right? So that's what it means to follow Prabhupada, right there. And that's realization. All right, I've revealed my internal realization to you. I've done something I shouldn't do. But that's my internal realization. You know, I hope to be at that platform. Okay, well, my external realization is it's time for prasadam. What?
Announcements?
Oh, announcement.
Announcement.